All right, Common Sense Ohio. We are all back at the table. October 8, 2025. Truckers on ice, driving on High Street, sort of. Turns out getting high may impact your ability to drive. And domestic domestic violence is on the rise. Those topics and much, much more here at Common Sense Ohio. Check us out, commonsenseohioshow.com. Since we're all back here, I think what I'll do is I'll go back to my this date in history. And it turns out on this date in history, the O'Leary cow kicked over the lantern, triggering one of the most famous fires. October 8, 1871, flames spark in the Chicago barn of Patrick and Catherine O'Leary, igniting a two-day blaze that kills 200 to 300 people, destroys 17,450 buildings, leaves 100,000 people homeless, causes an estimated $2 million in damage in 1871 dollars. That's $4 billion today.
Wow.
Legend has it the cow kicked over the lantern in the O'Leary barn, and everybody knows what happens from there. A couple things about this, though, that I found sort of intriguing. First of all, there were other fires that day. The most deadly fire in history was in Wisconsin that same day, and that was called, let's pull that up, and it sort of got eclipsed. The massive Peshtigo fire burns in Wisconsin. That kicked off apparently in a sawmill. There was a lot of slash and burn type stuff, people claiming their territory, and that was the most deadly fire, 1,200 people.
Oh, my God, 1,200 people?
Something like that, yeah. Wow. Same day.
Wow. Oh, my God.
The other thing I found notable about the Chicago fires, I was reading about it. First of all, by the way, the O'Leary, Miss O'Leary was finally exonerated by Chicago in 1997. she became a recluse after the fire and sort of died a lonely, miserable death.
Well, hopefully the cow made some good hamburger, too.
If she died,
wouldn't be around a while.
If she died in 1997, that's a pretty good long life for her. So.
But, you know, there's a bigger, as people might have figured out by now, I always look for a bigger message in these things.
Yeah.
And there is a bigger message in these things. Because of this fire and because of all this adversity, travesty, and horrendous stuff that went on, out of that sprang the brand new Chicago.
That's true.
Primarily of wooden structures before the fire. Chicago turned into a thriving metropolis afterwards because they redesigned the whole city, built the skyscrapers. The population, I think, increased almost by 50% afterwards. So it's funny what humans are capable of doing out of adversity.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the way, folks, I'm not shy about my biblical faith. These are stories in the Bible, right? This is like at the other end of adversity is growth.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, for sure.
And not that anybody wants to encourage adversity, but, you know, maybe there's a purpose, a bigger purpose as you're going through these things. To keep your eye on that ball and know that you'll get through it. But
I'm sure building codes changed and all kinds of things.
Yeah, lots of stuff happened as a result. But yeah, that was the fire. So hopefully as we experience our metaphorical fires in this day and age with all this conflict and all this horrendous stuff going on and the killing and the shooting, you know, we look for a bigger purpose that maybe there's some growth at the end of it that is good for all. But anyway, that is my two cents.
Well, and to your point, what we may not see it in our lifetime either.
Yeah, we don't, right.
Sometimes we don't, and we expect results. It's like, okay, this happened, and something's got to change, or something has to come from it. We may not see it.
We may not see it. You know, it's interesting. I think the apostles thought that the end of days were going to happen when they were still alive, right? Mm-hmm. Christ was going to return when they were still alive.
Right.
And every generation has thought the same thing. Now,
that's true.
You atheists out there would say that's because it's not going to happen. But we would say we would say something different, right? We would say, look, it's all in due time. And a drop of time, or that 2,000 years in our time it seems like an eternity. But in the big picture, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
It's a second. You know, it's like that. There is no time in the universe from that perspective. So you're right, Brett. I think we may not see what's happening here, but ultimately there will be something good that comes of it, I think.
Well, what was I'm sorry. I can't keep her name straight. The lady with a cow again?
Miss O'Leary.
O'Leary. Mrs. O'Leary. So she never got to see the final outcome either because she wasn't cleared till 1997, you said?
Right.
You know, she died, you know, under that, the thought out there, popular thought that it was her to blame for all of this.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't.
It wasn't. And look, it's also interesting to note dry weather and an abundance of wooden buildings, streets, and sidewalks. So they had wooden sidewalks, right? So
come
it's
on.
A tinderbox.
Right.
Made Chicago vulnerable fire. The city averaged 2 fires per day. In 1870.
Yeah.
There were 20 fires throughout Chicago the week before the Great Fire of 1870.
Wow.
So this was commonplace. Something had to happen. It was a matter of time. Like, we all knew it, just a matter of time.
Yeah.
But what are we doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, one more little analogy. After World War, my dad used to host exchange professors and students, and I got to talking to a guy one time. This is back in probably maybe the early 2000s. And it was right at sort of the emergence of cell phones. And okay. He was visiting the United States, and he says, your infrastructure here sucks. You guys suck. You know,
okay.
You got no trains, you got no this, you got no this, your phone system, it's arcane.
Yeah.
You're still using analog on everything. We're digital and blah, blah, blah. And I said, dare I ask why? He said, well, yeah, because all our stuff got destroyed in World War II and we had to rebuild it and we were forced to rebuild.
Yeah. And that's the story of the Japanese steel industry.
Yeah.
Same thing. Right? We're still using old Bessemer furnaces in Pittsburgh and Youngstown, Ohio, right? We bombed the Japanese into, you know, the previous century or whatever.
Yep.
And so their steel industry started from scratch after World War II with the modern furnaces.
That's right.
And then and now they outpace us. In fact, wasn't it Trump just like 2 months ago prevented the Japanese from buying U.S. steel?
Yeah.
Because they're now the number one steel maker.
Yeah, so
it's ridiculous.
It is interesting how the cycle of life. I guess.
It's
interesting.
Right?
But mostly we don't see it in our life, or we don't see it in real time. I guess is really what you're saying.
You need a longer lens.
That's the real lesson. And I know C.S. Lewis wrote a book on grief, and he talks about some of this stuff too. There's always a bigger purpose for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One door shuts, another opens.
Yeah,
true. Well. One door that shut that got left open, that was never shut, apparently spying on U.S. senators by the executive branch, got to be a thing with Obama. He spied on two senators, and they thought they had that scandal put to bed where the FBI would not do that anymore. One branch, you know, we're a three-branch government. You got the executive branch spying on the legislative branch. There's kind of a problem there, I think, with that. But anyway, under Biden, with this Arctic whatever thing looking into January 6th, Biden had the FBI spy on, well, or whoever Biden put in charge, Ray, Director Ray, had an operation where they spied on 9 Republican senators. And even Chris Coons, Democrat senator from, I think, Massachusetts or Maryland, wherever he's from, said that he thinks that is highly problematic and illegal. And he's right. I mean, what are you doing wiretapping the phone calls and the text messages of like Ron Johnson or Lindsey Graham? I mean, that's insane. What are they doing? And then, you know, here we are, we're not going to wait like Mrs. O'Leary's cow for 150 years to find out why. We need to find out right now what's going on with the FBI. I don't understand how out of control they got, but this is like worse than Watergate.
This is, I don't think there's enough negative attention on this about how outrageous this really is. And I don't care who's doing it. I mean, one side or the other, it doesn't make any difference.
No, it wouldn't matter to me if it was Nixon doing this to Democrat senators.
Well, that's what it is.
It's just as outrageous.
It is, right. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Mm. But I mean, these are the times we live in.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea coming off of this that you have the same FBI telling Google and, you know, this has all come out in the last couple of weeks where Google and Meta and all these Silicon Valley companies are now coming out and saying, yeah, okay, we're going to now re-platform, you know, crazy people like Alex Jones or even normal people like Dr. Peter McCullough. We're going to re-platform them back onto Google because the FBI, Biden sent the FBI out here to tell us to de-platform them. So we did that. Politically.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what is going on with free speech? What's going on? You know, and nobody can get to the Supreme Court and have them weigh in on private companies that turn off your speech. That whole Section 230 needs to be thrown out.
Well, and look, we got to be careful about casting stones in certain directions. I mean, I think Trump was, and he's got to be careful with this too. And I don't, this is old news, I guess, but it's been a while since we've been at the table, so we should kick around the FCC and what's been going on there.
Yeah.
I got no problem if affiliates of whatever network doesn't want to air Kimmel or any of these other guys.
Sure, yeah.
So that's a money decision. That's very easy for me.
That's right.
So you can't sell it. We're not going to sell it.
No.
So then eventually Disney or whoever's going to say, look, dude, you don't have a product that we can sell. Sorry.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's why Colbert's gone.
That's why Colbert's gone.
That's why Don Lemon's show's gone, et cetera, et cetera.
But the FCC, I forget the guy's name in charge yet, but he comes
out. Yeah, he made a comment.
And he comes out.
That was a bad comment.
As soon as the FCC starts putting his thumb on the scale, now we got the government too close to it. And I think Trump has to
Of course, he didn't, though. He made a bad comment that way. He never should have said that. And they didn't take any action. It wasn't the FCC that did.
The threat of action sometimes is enough.
When he said, we could do this the hard way or the easy way.
That's right.
That's what his quote was. And he had no business saying
none
that.
None whatsoever.
Totally agree.
Now, Brett, this is your wheelhouse because there is some old FCC constitutional law about the federal government being able to regulate the airwaves.
Yeah, sure.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And when it comes down to is that the FCC is not necessarily proactive in that regard. They're reactive. That if the general public doesn't want a program, they make their voices known.
Yes.
And then those stations may not be renewed. Their licenses may not be renewed. It's a 7-year cycle. But it's like, okay, it may be gone. So, yeah, he overstepped his bounds on that one.
Yeah.
He truly did. And, you know, that's not the purpose of it. And the FCC's lost its teeth over time. It truly has.
Well, I would like to point out, and then come back, Brett. I would like to point out the hypocrisy, right, of Jimmy Kimmel being off the air at ABC's decision, not the FCC. The ABC did that for what, 4 days? Dr. Peter McCulloch was deplatformed for 4 freaking years.
Well, no, right? And Roseanne. And I mean
come
lots
on,
of history,
dude. We're talking 4 days versus 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it was the FBI that caused the Section 230 threat. That's why Google made those decisions. That's our government taking action.
But I think it's worthy of note. And Brett, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm going back to my law school, constitutional law class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I believe the idea was in the old days, and it's not like this anymore, to your point. Was we have a limited number of stations, I'll call it.
Natural frequencies in the air.
Yes.
To deliver programming.
Meaning not everybody can have one.
Yeah. That's right.
And if one side controls the whole thing, the idea of the FCC regulating that was to say, look, you have to give equal time to different platforms. You can't just close one out. And at the time, that was sort of a groundbreaking regulatory scheme. And people were like, hold on a second. Are we getting into speech? And the court says no, because, you know, we got to make it equal. And the idea is, since there's a limited resource here, there needs to be some government intervention to make sure it's fair. But it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to put your thumb on the scale and make it unfair one way or another. Mm-hmm. And as I always say, you guys have heard me 100 times, if it's happening with the people that you like in power, the other side's going to do the same thing when they're in power, and we don't like it either way. That's always been my approach.
Well, I don't think Trump is sending the FBI to deplatform people. So when you say it happens on both sides, well, that I have yet to see that.
I hope not.
Well, if he does, I will be the first one to call for his impeachment.
I guess what I'm saying about Trump is this:
because Biden should have been
very
for
clear
that.
About it. Say, look, we're not going to do this. And, you know, he sort of famously did this with Hillary. And this is, I'm making a shapeshift here, but he sort of famously, he goes, I'm going to throw in Joe. Remember the comment at the debate?
Yeah.
But then later on, he says, no, I'm not going to prosecute her. We're not going to do that. Like, he didn't cross the Rubicon of that.
No.
So he, like, cooler heads prevailed. He's bombastic about it sometimes. And hopefully that's what's going on here.
Well, she should have been prosecuted, in
probably.
My opinion.
Probably.
Because you know who let her off was James Comey.
But the problem with it is,
who doesn't make prosecution decisions.
And Trump understood the optics of that weren't good. And we didn't want to get to a spot where our political rivals are prosecuting each other.
Yeah.
And then
to
your point, that's exactly what they did to him.
Exactly right.
So now it's like turnabout's fair play. And we've just got this ratcheting problem. Somebody's got to stop it. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to stop it. Now you could easily make an argument, prosecute all these bastards. I get it. Find a line, make a definition of who gets prosecuted and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And then go on. And I've suggested, look, if you're going to prosecute, if you're going to prosecute the other side for some sort of tax fraud for listing two primary residences, then look at everybody's. And, you know, just pick, if you were going to say, look, we're going to prosecute this crime now, go through Congress and pick them all. Guys on your side, guys on the other side.
Right.
Whoever it is.
Yeah.
And do it evenly. But don't target people because they're against you and only prosecute them.
Right.
Now, you got Comey and these other people who committed legitimate
crimes.
Who's
being arraigned today, by the way.
Is he? Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. I got to see what the evidence is. But, you know, it's old. It looks like retribution. So you can have two things at once. You could have retribution and you could have a legitimate crime.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, how unfair would it be that just because it looks like retribution that you don't prosecute somebody?
That's right.
That's not fair.
Well, so, and like you mentioned too, it's the optics of it. You can control the conversation around why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But you can, but you can't. And let me pull back on that because let me change my mind on that as I just say it, because a politician can come out and say what they want. Then you have the news media carving out and shaping the whole narrative around it.
Well, that's right.
That you can't control. So really you can't. Okay. I think, again,
both things
well,
are true.
Well, you can control it if you deplatform your enemies.
Well, true.
You can control your message, but you can't control what people do with it.
Because you could come out, for an example, you know, Trump can come out and say, this is what we're going to do. The narrative is this without retribution. Well, Fox News can take a hold of it and just blow it out of proportion.
That's right.
They can. Oh, well.
You know, and the other side, too. And just, no, I'm not blaming Fox.
Like MSNBC and CNN, I mean.
Same thing. No,
Washington Post.
What I'm saying is the left or right-leaning media will blow it out of proportion.
I think it's worthy.
It's just an example.
So they went after all of these advisors to Trump in his first administration for, quote, lying to Congress or not appearing because they said, well, we have executive immunity. Yeah. And they threw people like Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon into frickin' prison.
Into prison. That's right. And that was groundbreaking at the time.
Yeah. So, hey, Mr. Comey, enjoy your time defending your ass.
Right. This is what turnabout.
You lied to Ted Cruz when he was interviewing you on, you know, in a Senate hearing. Here we go. Let's
rock
and roll.
So the argument's going to be turnabout's fair play.
Yeah, yeah. And is it retribution? I don't care if it is.
Well, like I said, it can be both.
Yeah. Because it could be both.
It can be both.
And I don't really care if it's right. Call it whatever you want.
Except this. If you're going, and I think you fix the optics. The only way to fix the optics of it, if you want to fix the optics, is you don't just have to prosecute the crime, not the person. So if other people are doing the same thing, well, then you're going to end up in a situation where you have something called constitutionally, it's called selective prosecution. So multiple people do the same thing. You're going to target one person and not everybody else that are similarly situated.
Right.
We have to be careful of that.
Right.
You have to
I
be
agree.
Careful of that.
I totally agree with that.
So if somebody,
I don't like
I
that.
Said, if I'd love to know how many members of Congress have fudged their primary residence, because it's like that's the Fertile Crescent, because they all have two residents.
Right.
Know, they all
right.
have two residents. So the,
right.
you know,
the best one is Letitia James, that the very prosecutor in New York who went after Trump, you know, for allegedly misstating the value of his real estate.
Yeah, let he without yeah. sin.
Did the same exact thing on her vacation property. Right. So anyway, so guys, a little bit about the government shutdown. I just have one little take on this, and then, you know, like we could talk about it ad nauseum, but it's been happening now for 1 week. So, you know, we're into our seventh or eighth day. One of the tactics, and it's used by both sides, is they pick out their favorite program that's not happening, and then they say it's not happening because of the other guy. So I just like to pick one, which is air traffic control. There's no reason that should be operated by the federal government anyway. That could be ATC could be operated by any number of private corporations. And then none of this would be happening. Your ticket fee that you pay Delta or, you know, United or whatever, part of your ticket would just be to underwrite the cost of the ATC system.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, and then, there's an argument to be made that it would be done better.
It could is right. Yeah.
More efficiently, more right. effectively. Yeah, that's
and let them bid on it periodically. Yeah. You know, if somebody sucks, then you replace them.
Yeah. Yeah, just because we're comfortable with a certain scenario that the government's always been part of air traffic control. It's like, oh, if we let it go, it's planes will just drop out of the sky. It's back that's to, not necessarily
back
true.
To our theme of the day. So they all get fired. Not, well, look, if air traffic control goes away, what replaces it? And like you said, is it going to be worse or is it going to be better? Let's find out.
Let's find out.
We may find out.
I'm sure there's research out there showing one way or the other. It probably, you know, well, somebody's looked into this.
The union lobby is a powerful one.
The old saw is, well, it took the federal government to prosecute World War II or put a man on the moon. Well, actually, other than drafting soldiers, those were all private corporations that built all that material, that built the cannons and the tanks and the airplanes.
That's right.
So give me a break.
And the difference is, anybody who studies World War II will know this, is that, and Stephen Ambrose wrote a book called Citizen Soldiers making this point. It's not my point, but it's like we won that war because of the might of our private industrial complex.
Arsenal of democracy.
And because of the flexibility, wit, and capabilities of our individual citizens, soldiers, who are not always acting like the Germans were on strict protocols.
Yeah.
So
because they came off of farms. They weren't Prussians that got put into the German army at age 17 and then were there for the next 40 years.
And we didn't have a command structure that would have forbade us from waking up Hitler on D-Day because he was sleeping, you know, or moving troops out of Pas-de-Calais to go defend Normandy. I mean,
we would get FDR out of the hot tub in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
That's right.
At the drop of a hat to make a decision.
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't even be part of the decision, perhaps. You know, it would have been done on the ground.
Standing orders.
That was the point. Right. It would have been done with boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Guys, now there was a lot of, there's a lot of army nonsense that was going on too.
Sure.
You know, attack, attack, attack. We don't care. Attack, attack, attack. We don't care. But and the soldiers are like, this is lunacy.
Right.
But anyway, the point is that we have a citizen population of free people.
Yeah.
Who freedom gives you flexibility and you get wit.
Lots of mistakes by the U.S. Army. Including they had the Japanese coming in to bomb Pearl Harbor on radar. They had it hours ahead of time on radar, the U.S. Army, and they said, it's probably just B-17s.
Yeah, I mean,
let it go.
Why would Japan bomb Pearl Harbor?
Gee, we got this radar system on top of this mountain in Hawaii, and it says they're coming in, and it's state-of-the-art, super-secret system. Let's just ignore that data. So, yes, we made our share of mistakes.
All right, you want to talk about weed?
Yeah, so we'll talk about weed, and then let's talk about this Oklahoma ICE operation.
Well, we said ICE the weed is sort of the event, so let's talk. We can do ICE first. That's fine.
Okay, so over the course of 3 days, September 22nd to the 25th, on I-40, just east of the Texas-Oklahoma border on I-40, roughly around 6,000 drivers were stopped of commercial vehicles. They arrested ICE and the Oklahoma State Police, arrested more than 125 illegals who were found in these commercial vehicles. 90 of those were driving. So we're talking semi-tractors and other commercial vehicles.
Now, here's the question.
Yes, sir. In so 3 days.
For those who are driving, did they have a valid CDL, commercial driver's license?
They had CDLs in the case of, 44, that's 56, that's 66. 67 had commercial driver's licenses from California, then Pennsylvania, then Illinois. And famously, you'll love this, you guys will love this. The governor of Oklahoma put on his website a copy of one of the CDLs that was confiscated. It was from the state of New York. And under the caption, name was in quotes, no name given, unquote. So the state of New York issued a CDL to somebody without their name on the CDL.
This is why I put in quotes a valid CDL. Because the question is, like, I've known people who have gone through the CDL training, of course, and it's not an easy thing, and it's not a cheap thing either.
Right.
Now, I think some carriers will pay for it if you go sign up or however that works.
Well, Stephen, also, we know to get this real ID thing now on any driver's license, this little star that's next to the state of Ohio, it's a 50-state requirement, right, mm-hmm. by the Department of Homeland Security. This is like a six-year-old requirement. Like, this has been phased in now for years. Yeah. And Ohio just made it, like, absolutely mandatory. And Homeland Security, they won't let you get on an airplane right. now if you don't have real ID.
So
the question is, how can this?
It's racist, Norm.
How can that be
don't
real
be racist.
ID?
Don't be racist.
Well, hey, these guys.
Or xenophobic, whatever the terms.
The list of countries that these drivers were from, the 90, is unbelievable. They're from, like, two were from the Chinese marijuana farm right there in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Chinese nationals. There were people from Uzbekistan, Azerbaijani. Like Azerbaijan, like there were people from all over the world.
I mean, if you wanted to create
in 3 days,
if you wanted to have a spy on the ground in the United States from somewhere else, like, what better profession?
Yeah.
Let's get them a CDL and let them drive all over the country.
Because those are jobs, Steve, that Americans won't do. They won't drive trucks, Steve. Don't you know that? That's why we need...
Talk to my father-in-law who drove a truck for 40 years.
We need H-1B people to come in and drive these trucks, because those are jobs that people like your father-in-law, Steve, that he doesn't want to do that job.
Yeah. I guess...
Pass a bong.
Right. Yeah. Just going to say, so my question is, are the companies that are owning the trucks...
Yeah.
In trouble as well, too.
It's a good question. So when do they know it? It's the classic.
Exactly. And then the genesis of, like, why are so many of these people driving trucks?
Because it's cheap labor.
Does it end up being cheap? Follow the money.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that came to mind.
So, Steve, you and I we hate this civil forfeiture shit, because there ought to be some kind of hearing or whatever. But I would say in this case, when it comes to illegals operating commercial vehicles, and we saw one, North Carolina, wasn't it, or Florida, where the guy killed a whole family because he did a
California, it's happened.
Did a U-turn in the middle of a highway?
Well, so then,
civil
forfeiture,
you have
language requirements. So just because you can pass a CDL, like, how can you pass a CDL with a foreign?
But to Brett's point, take that freaking truck away from that company.
Exactly.
Well, that company paid. Now, the insurance paid anyway, but.
I mean, when these cops,
I got you.
So, you know what I'm saying? So take the truck.
Here's what's interesting.
That'll stop it.
So this is what lawyers think about. If you don't like this, don't go to law school. Like, you start thinking about this crap.
Right.
If I own a company, have commercial trucks.
Yeah.
Say I have a fleet of them, however many.
Yeah.
I have something called fleet insurance, meaning I have an insurance carrier that supplies insurance for my company. And I've represented enough truck drivers to know that if you get a couple dings on your driving record, like speeding tickets or even things, there's like the administrative stuff and the traffic stuff.
Yeah.
The administrative stuff, if you're just in an incident that didn't even rise to an offense, those create dings on your traffic record. So a couple of things I'm thinking about. If I'm employing unlawful or illegal aliens who aren't necessarily qualified, who can't I wonder then if an accident like the ones we're talking about, insurance will cover it, because that's the kind of crap that blows your fleet insurance. So they say, well, wait a minute, you didn't have a legal driver in the seat of that truck. I'm not going to cover this accident. And that will effectively put those companies out of business then.
Yeah.
Or is there even a third party? So here's an example. I'm going to get into a personal situation here, not personal, but so we have this delivery made last week. And it's just a delivery of whatever it was to our home. The guy jumps out of his car, pulls in our driveway, pulls out, goes to the front porch to drop off whatever he was going to drop off on our front porch. He forgot to put it in park. Drives right into our garage door.
Wow.
He goes like Amazon or something.
It was a subcontract of a delivery of that last mile type of logistics company.
Right. So, like an Uber guy or something.
So luckily, we don't have a ring or any of those things. So luckily, the neighbor across the street caught the moment that it happened. So
did they leave?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No notes. No nothing.
Of
course. So the whole process, and this goes back to what we're talking about here, is the whole process is I get a hold of the last mile delivery company that's on the box. I'm not going to name it because it's not a big deal. It's not Amazon, though. They subcontract with another company that subcontracts with other drivers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like so damn layered. And I wonder if it's the same way with this.
Sure.
It's these drivers are just they're insured and bonded on their own. Mm. So the companies are untouchable.
Well, you have
the
independent operators. And then you have people that employ people directly. So I don't know if these are independent operators, if they're subcontractors. Whatever it is.
Wow.
Look, the point is it's gotten out of
common.
Control.
Yeah, exactly. In 3 days, they arrested 125 plus people, and 90 of them are illegals operating the vehicles.
Yeah.
In 3 days, man.
Yeah.
You wonder, like, if they did it for a year.
And I heard.
Multiply that by what, 110%?
I don't know.
It would be off the hook. It'd be it'd be like 1,000 or 9,000.
I don't know what the study was or what the stat was, but even where I heard, I can't remember, so don't hold me to it. But it's something like, look, the job market has shifted here where there are more jobs than there are people that will do the job. So apparently the deportations are starting. One would say a good hypothesis would be there are fewer workers because of the deportations. And, you would say, well, that's bad. Or you could say, well, good, because now we can start filling in those jobs.
And paying real wages.
And paying real wages, right.
So because as your father-in-law, I'm sure, could also, if he was here, he'd tell us, these truck drivers are underpaid.
He goes.
Terribly underpaid.
Bananas when he watches some of these guys driving.
Yeah.
And he's commented on this over the years.
Yeah.
About how these guys are not qualified to do the job.
No, they're not.
You know, and he's the old school guy that he still does this when we load up our pickup truck. We'll stop at the first stoplight and nobody else is around. He'll get out and do a walk around to make sure all the straps are still secure.
Yeah.
And
And
I'm like, dude, we got to hit the. He's like, no.
Safety.
Like, everything is like
that's right.
Yeah.
And I don't think these modern guys are like that.
They used to call professional truckers the kings of the road because they really were super safe. In terms of like assured clear distance, they were way back from the cars in front of them.
And now they steal your distance.
That's right.
Oh, I
was cut off twice yesterday.
They're unreal.
In the rain. I'm like, this is lunacy. What are you doing?
Yeah. Wow. You cannot stop this vehicle, dude.
No.
You're going to wipe out 10 or 12 people.
Well, speaking of marijuana, these trucks are picking and delivering marijuana, but there's also a local marijuana problem.
Yeah. So
maybe
the American College of Surgeons decided to study what's in the bloodstream of people who were killed or caused deaths on the highways in vehicle accidents. And they picked Montgomery County, which includes Dayton, Ohio. So it's a major county. They picked that county, got their statistics, and determined in this study that came out this week that 42% of KIA or traffic deaths in Montgomery County, Ohio, featured THC in the system of the drivers.
Yeah, but this is we have to be careful with this stat. It's sort of like when people say there are X number of alcohol-related crashes, and then you would have to say, what is alcohol-related? And it turns out alcohol-related could be, this is going way back, but I remember alcohol in the study, alcohol-related could be, you just went to the grocery store and you've got a 12-pack of beer in the trunk.
Well, they're not saying THC caused it.
Well,
that's
what I mean. We have to be careful.
Oh, they were careful.
Well, no. They were. But like you said, Brett, they controlled they controlled their message. And then what do people make of it?
Coincidence does not prove causality.
Well, and particularly in this scenario, because there is a common understanding of THC in somebody's system is that it doesn't go away tomorrow. It's in there. It's like if you happen to use weed a week ago and you haven't since.
Right.
You're still going to have a positive THC content in your blood.
So let me ask you, Steve, has the detection science by law enforcement gotten any better?
No. I mean, they say it has.
It's still hard to detect if somebody's under the influence.
They claim to have this thing called a modified Romberg test where they do this. Like everybody, not everybody, a lot of people see it on the side of the road, the horizontal gaze nystagmus test for alcohol. Mm. They claim they have something like that for drugs or different drugs. I don't buy it. I don't think it's particularly effective. I think the primary thing you have to look for is an open bag of Doritos in the car. Because somebody who's high is going to be eating Doritos, right?
Some munchie-related circumstantial evidence.
That's right. Or Taco Bell.
Oh, my God.
I love it. Yeah. I love. Well, it's I guess it's concerning, and it's not, you know, to me, it's not shocking when you legalize recreational marijuana, and it's still classed in federally, right? It's still like fentanyl.
It's still a scheduled drug. Cocaine. I mean, you can't have it legally federally, yeah. But everybody's got it.
And everybody's got it now. And looking the other way, and
look, it's from what I understand, it's a lot more powerful than it ever has been, yeah. And they're starting to really zero in on the science. So there are pros and cons of it. I would just caution, be careful because,
yeah,
you know, I know people who smoke every day,
yeah,
or use it every day. And, you know, I don't know if they're driving or what they're doing, but even if you think it makes you more focused, be careful. It may not. And even if it does, the law's not going to care.
So Steve, you raise an excellent point that was in that report. The lady giving the report noted that back in like the 60s, if you smoked a joint or ate a brownie, it was maybe 7% amount of THC. And she's saying now some of these vapes are over 90%.
Well, you can dial in what you want. You can get little pills that say this is X percent. I don't know how it works, but I've seen it.
I mean, apparently, it's like you're saying, it's really potent these
days. Yeah, potent
stuff.
And
people may be getting, you know, over their head. Not so to speak, you know, without really knowing how effective medically, it is.
And, you know, I think like a lot of drugs, alcohol being one of them, you know, I stopped drinking alcohol a decade ago. And once you're done with it, you realize you don't really need it. Do we really need, this is a different argument than saying it should be legal or not legal.
Sure, right. Sure.
But we have to all choose now what drugs we're going to use. Right. Do we really need it?
Do we really need golfing, for example? Yeah. I hate golfing, so I'll go with my sons. But yeah, there's a lot of things in life that should be legal and should be out there, like golf.
Well, golf
like
isn't
marijuana.
Quite the same because golf doesn't make you drunk or intoxicated or high. But marijuana, you just can't tell me it doesn't change your brain chemistry in some way.
Well, sure.
It has to.
Right.
And then you become
right.
dependent upon it like anything else.
Yeah.
And so, look, you can choose to use it. You can choose not to use it.
Yeah.
It's just like coffee.
Right.
Honestly, I mean,
I'm never giving it up. It's an irritant stimulant.
But
I'll bet a ton of accidents have been caused by coffee.
Well,
I'll guarantee it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's that. But if I stop, you know this too. You're going to get a headache.
You're going to get a headache. There's withdrawal.
Because of road raging.
I mean, you can imagine some guy all jacked up on.
Well, now they're
caffeine.
They're energy drinks.
They're energy drinks.
Well, I call them caffeine drinks.
And let's go to the THC route. Now you're seeing THC introduced into alcohol.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They have THC drinks.
When I was in Canada,
now you're mixing. It's like,
have you seen that?
Is
that in the U.S. yet?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Up in Canada, they were serving that at the bar, and
what are you talking about?
Yeah,
THC. There are drinks that aren't alcohol that are just THC.
Wow.
And then there are drinks that are. I don't know if they have alcohol anti. But I remember a study somewhere in college when we were getting educated about the horrible nature of alcohol and drugs. But there was somebody that says when you drink alcohol and smoke THC or smoke marijuana, it does something that makes the alcohol intoxication worse. I can't remember what the physiological response was.
Yeah.
But there was some connection.
Yeah, and I don't know the benefits of or why they're doing it. I have no other. I don't know.
I remember when they started putting Red Bull and vodka, and I was like, what are people doing?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
I'm tired. No, I'm not.
Exactly. Well, talk about hitting the schizophrenia going on in your head. Yeah.
Well, guys, another Ohio study that came out, this was the Ohio Domestic Violence Network, which I think is a nonprofit here in Ohio. They came out with this. They worked with the FBI and the Ohio OBC or whatever it is, OBI. They worked with federal and state statistics people in the domestic violence area and have come out with 157 domestic violence deaths in the last fiscal year, which ended June the 30th, which compares to the previous year of 114. So they're noting a 38% increase in domestic violence deaths. 80 of the 157, so roughly half, were murder suicides, which involved more than just the, you know, one kid, like killing your wife. This was like killing the wife and three kids.
Look, I mean, this is not to say that they're wrong, but I always have to ask when I hear these studies, how are we defining domestic violence today and how is it defined in the past?
Yeah.
Because a murder suicide in 10 years ago may not have been called a domestic violence incident. It might've just been called a murder suicide.
Well, they're using whatever FBI classification,
As I like to say this sort of facetiously, it's like the government will find as much fraud as it wants. If you want to raise fraud statistics, just start looking for fraud.
Well,
and if you want to raise domestic violence statistics, start looking for domestic violence. If you want to raise drunk driving statistics, start prosecuting, put a task force out. It doesn't mean that the number of drunks driving have gone up, but it means that you're catching more of them. It's probably both here, I'd guess.
I don't know enough about if they use the same standard this year as they did the previous year. But if you assume that they did, which that is an assumption, which, you know, to your point, that ought to be clarified. You know, did they use the same criteria? But if we can get past that, what is alarming for us three immediately, because it's right here in our county or the county that we all live near, 1/3 of those 157 deaths were here in this one county. Hmm. And then the second county with the highest number was Cuyahoga, which is Cleveland.
Let me give you an example of how this might work out.
I mean, that's unreal.
Say 10 years ago, I had a case where somebody hurt their wife or she hurt the husband badly enough where it was charged as a felony. So it caused serious physical harm.
Yeah.
Case gets indicted as a felonious assault. Now, 10 years later, we would probably see, because what we're starting to see is strangulation charges. So now we're starting to see strangulation, which is probably classified as domestic violence. And they would indict also a domestic violence case or charge a domestic violence case at the same time. So you could have the same conduct with a conviction now of domestic violence, whereas before you'd get convicted of something else, but it wouldn't be called domestic violence. And if you've, whatever the screening process is, you could lose that. Now, I might be wrong, but that's sometimes how those stats get askew.
Well, I can't comment because I just don't know.
We don't know. And I'm not saying I know. I'm just saying these are questions that I have.
Setting that issue just not aside, but just, you know, putting that in abeyance for a second. One of the comments that the researcher and the president of the Domestic Violence Network said, they noted that because they have the number of attacks, and this is just the number of, if you will, the ones that got, you know, to the point where it turned into a death. And one of the things that she noted was that, as opposed to the previous year, this past fiscal year, more of the attacks matured, if you will, or turned into like a completed murder, mm-hmm. like it, or if you will, a death. Maybe, you know, I don't want to get legal about calling it a murder and making that a homicide, but whatever you want to call it, a death, that more of the acts of violence were completed to the point that a person died. And that is a little different than the previous year. That she was trying to explain, well, why did it go up? And she said, well, the number of attacks may have been the same or similar, but then more people died from them. So we're getting better at killing people?
Or let's speculate an alternative. Law enforcement response might be down.
Might be down.
You know?
Yeah.
That could be.
It could be something like that. It could be, but in other words, it's probably multiple. As Thomas Sowell likes to say, rarely is a single outcome attributable to one cause.
Yeah, so the episode, what you're saying, Steve, is like maybe a year ago, it would take on average a half hour for the police to arrive. And of course, famously in Westerville, those guys went, the two policemen who were assassinated at the door were responding to a domestic. And so you wonder, okay, after, what was his name? Juran and, the Italian officer.
Yeah, I forget his name.
Yeah.
But I know
Morelli.
Morelli, yeah.
Morelli and Juran. So maybe after they got shot at the door responding to a domestic, and then up in Morrow County, a deputy sheriff just this year, same thing. So maybe they're slower to respond.
Or maybe they're...
They take an hour now.
Maybe we can take at their word those who wanted to, quote, defund the police, and we can then say what caused that. And then we're going to hold police liable for stuff that we didn't before. So then we're going to discourage people from joining the force. Like, ask... We've had...
Oh, and we're down.
And we've had
guests.
Right.
We're so down.
I'm not saying
the
police are doing a bad job.
Yeah, but that is a factor.
But there might be fewer of them.
Yeah.
Look, I've had a situation in my parking lot, and I couldn't get police out, or my son was in a car accident, and I said, call the police, and they wouldn't come out. And I get it. They don't have the manpower to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and also the question is begged, too, is like, what is going on? Why are they coming to this end?
That's what I wonder.
What is happening? And hopefully the study, or there's more studies to follow. It's like, why are these people just miserable? Why are they so, you know, why are they so damn miserable?
Like, could it be that we're turning upside down all the values that have kept us content for thousands of years now?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's multiple answers to that, of course, always.
There were certainly pretty firm guardrails to our behavior as a Judeo-Christian country. Most people believe that there would be some sort of final judgment after you die, right? And I heard Trump talk about nations that are great tend to have a sound religious.
Yeah, there's no secret to that, right? Yeah, there's no secret to that.
You know, like if you think nothing matters and the only thing that matters is how you live now, and there's no judgment.
The Greeks figured this out.
Then you might as well just go ahead and be a pig.
Like, just study history, right? The hedonists and the Bacchanalia. I mean, it's like it rarely is happiness at the end of that rainbow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Brett's point, you know.
There's a study about, I'm sorry to cut you off. There's a study on, did you ever see the study on kids at recess? Where you let kids out at recess and there's no boundaries. They tend to just like sort of want, they don't do anything. They want around there. But if you give them boundaries, then they go play and they start to learn how to function. So when you create no boundaries, you just create chaos.
Wow.
You know, it's an interesting.
Yeah.
And when you can do whatever you want, that's not free. How many people have gone to pick out carpet and there's too many choices? You get stuck.
Or if you pick out paint color and you leave.
Right? And you don't feel good about it.
No.
You don't feel like you've accomplished anything.
Yeah.
It's like, damn it, you do it. I don't care.
That is an interesting.
So zero boundaries, like the most free, it's ironic because the most free that you can be creates the least amount of freedom and productivity. Now somewhere in the middle, you need a boundary.
Yeah.
But too much stifles you, but no boundaries create chaos.
Yeah, like CB radio when everybody used back in the trucker days and everybody would talk at the same time, then there's no communication.
There's no communication, right. So there's got to be.
Chaos.
Hence the beginning of the FCC.
And what's interesting.
That's what was that in the 1920s. That's what was going on.
Look,
yeah.
Anybody who's still listening to this is probably bored deaf. But it's like what's interesting about what you said is it punctuates the point because those communicating on the two-way platform, you have to wait for the other. And it's not like there's a law that says you have to wait. It's like it has to come from here.
That's right.
It has to come from your own human nature, figuring things out in the world.
Right.
That if you don't do this, then nothing gets done. It's sort of like the old debate between Hobbes and Locke. Hobbes said people are inherently bad, so we need a dictator to fix it. This read Leviathan. So you need to have this firm control authoritarian to fix it. Locke said people are bad, and that's exactly why we don't need it, because people figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
Because they'll realize if we can't create an agreement and shake hands, then we'll both starve.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to have.
That was Locke, rather, that said that.
Yeah.
So.
So for you philosophers, you know more than I do. I've oversimplified it, but that's the point.
So the desire to have a functional community is not just altruistic. It's also It serves your own need.
Basic human necessity.
It's a necessity.
Basic human necessity.
It serves you, to, if you will, to be a good citizen.
And we are promoting the opposite.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Correct.
In
yeah.
many ways.
In many ways.
Yeah. Go have right. sex with whoever you want.
Well,
don't worry about it. Get an abortion. Do the. And I'm not. This isn't an argument about it, but it's like right. think of the chaos that creates and how unhappy people are.
Yeah, yeah, so. You're right, and it's reflected in our culture. And I'm not. I don't want to pick on Disney for the umpteenth time, but like, you know, they come out with movies titled Wicked, and you're like, well, gosh, I remember in the old days it would be like Snow White.
Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs. Like, they screwed that up.
Yeah,
too.
It's like. It's like now the worst possible aspects of a character are kind of used to market to people, even if the message at the end of the day is a nice message. It's yeah. it's kind of sad that it's become that way. But it seems like people are really interested in the dark side of things these days. And yeah, to Brett's point, maybe some of this depression and stuff is what's driving the violence.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Well, speaking of violence, I was thinking of this. I don't know what you think, Steve, because I definitely agree that the posse comitatus restrictions against the military being used against the civilian population is one of the fundamental federal protections that we should, you know, uphold and
proceed with caution.
And proceed with caution. However, when you look at the streets of Chicago and Portland this past week, I think there is a case to be made that not only do you deploy National Guard for protecting federal personnel and federal property, but I'm starting to think a case could be made about insurrection in those cities.
Yeah, well, look, let's first of all talk about Posse Comitatus Act in the United States. It was codified in 18 U.S.C. 1385. Rutherford B. Hayes signed it in.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Okay. But it basically limits the federal military personnel. It limits the use of federal military personnel to enforce domestic laws by the federal government or other government entities such as county sheriffs, et cetera. And the idea was, look, we have home rule. We have we call this federalism. So or the state has its inherent police power to deal with this stuff. And what we're getting at now is, all right, what do we do when the states won't do it? And what chaos does that cause?
Right.
I think there are two workarounds and we're seeing both. One is when the federal facilities are the threat or are in danger. Are
and
in jeopardy.
Personnel.
And personnel, right.
And personnel.
So if ICE is federal, you know, there's a decent argument that you can bring in federal authority to deal with that.
Yeah.
Or if the federal government building, our courthouse, is in jeopardy or under attack, then you can bring in troops to do that. And, you know, the Dems sort of did that, I guess, on some level in D.C. D.C. is different, but when they surrounded the Congress for how many months? So, and then the other exception would be when the states ask for it.
Right.
And, you know, I think Trump would do very well to start, and I think he has, go to the red states, say, look, you want some help in some of your cities? And sure. And show what it can do.
Well, we just talked about Oklahoma, for example.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So show what it can do. But I proceed with caution here because I hate the idea of federal troops on the ground in local cities. And it just once you cross that bridge, it's difficult, I think, to back that up.
Let me bring up a precedent that you may go, aha. I don't mean Steve. I'm not being personal here, but maybe our viewers. This one did not exactly occur to me until I dug into it, this issue a little bit deeper. So when JFK sent in, when he federalized the National Guard so that the students could attend college at the University of Alabama, mm-hmm. you remember George Wallace, right, was the governor of Alabama.
So we don't need you down here. We got this under control.
We don't need all y'alls down here in Bama. So, you know, he stood at the doorway and said, those kids are not coming in to the University of Alabama. And JFK said, well, they sure as shit are. I'm nationalizing the Alabama National Guard. Mm-hmm. I'm federalizing them. And that was to protect the civil rights of those black college students.
That's
like
right.
James Meredith.
There would have been an argument that directly conflicted with Posse Comitatus, and it would have been a legitimate argument, but nobody cared because it was for a good cause.
Well, actually, JFK, in the legalities that his brother, RFK Sr., and JFK as president, in their order to that National Guard, they called it an insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you to know that.
No, they used
they used the word insurrection.
They defined the criteria that would have triggered the ability to act.
So look, is Governor Pritzker, when he and Brandon up there, the mayor, when they tell the feds, we will not send in the police to back you up,
it can
is that not an insurrection?
This is the legal stuff I geek out on, because eventually this will matriculate up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they're going to define what insurrection is, and this is common law. So, well,
and let me throw some gas on the fire.
Okay.
So those were, I believe it was a quantity of 5 black students that wanted to go to the University of Alabama. So that was for the benefit of the civil rights, legitimate civil rights of those 5 students. Putative students that were going to go to Alabama. Okay. There have been 5,000 people who have died in Chicago by crime since Brandon, the mayor of Chicago, has taken office.
And before that, Lightfoot, whatever her name was. I mean,
No, this Brandon Johnson, current mayor.
But before her was, or before Brandon was Lightfoot.
The alien. Right, that had the bug eyes. She was
an odd looking dog.
Anyway, so Brandon, 5,000 people have died under his mayorship. And I would just like to point out, well, the vast majority of those people were African Americans. What about their civil right to live, to actually be alive? Isn't that a civil right also? And so if there is a government insurrection against the federal government in Chicago, which is not standing up for the civil rights of black citizens in Chicago to stay alive, it seems to me it's an even more urgent situation than the JFK protecting 5 people to go to college. They're both insurrections, and the one is much bigger and much more, if you will, of an emergency. Mm-hmm. So I'm just drawing that analogy and making that parallel. And I haven't seen anybody in the popular press do that, so this is a first.
Yeah, I did hear somebody talk about
it. Darn it.
But it's not getting spun around like we do. I mean,
yeah.
People don't like it.
No, they don't want to hear about those civil rights.
It doesn't fit within the narrative they want it to be. So I think it's a complicated issue. It's how you define insurrection. How you define the criteria that triggers the regulatory power of the government.
And so in the past, I've heard these scholars, you know, lawyers bat this around. The factual determination of whether or not it was an insurrection has always been by the executive.
Mm-hmm.
There has never been a case where the Supreme Court has said, oh, you can't define that as an insurrection.
Taken to its extreme, that makes the powers we call in law plenary. That means there is no limit to it, which isn't true, or that can't be the case either. So somewhere it'll have to get dealt
with. Right.
Well, look, let's wrap it up good and bad.
Yep. Little football talk. I would just say wonderful thing of the week. The Bengals are looking to replace poor old Jake, who just could not get the job done on Sunday. So they have recruited from their nemesis team, the Cleveland Browns, Joe Flacco, who was resting on his Barco lounger when the Browns got him to replace, you know, when what was it, Desmond, or whoever the guy was that did the back rubs and, you know, when they threw him out, they brought in Joe Flacco to save the day. Well, he didn't save the day in Cleveland. And so now he's gone and he's going to the Bengals because Joe Burrow's
hurt. And he will excel. Because that's just how it works. That's just how it works with Cleveland.
That's just
how it works.
Yeah.
So my outrage of the week would be this school superintendent in the largest school district in the state of Iowa, which is the city of Des Moines, Ian Roberts from Guyana, who came and left the U.S. over 10 times and had an order from May of 2024 from a federal immigration court in absentia was ordered to leave the country. And when ICE tracked him down as the school superintendent of the city of Des Moines, because he just made up his resume and got the job, they found him in some bushes with a sidearm and $3,000 in cash. This is I would say that the school board of Des Moines and its hiring company did a bang up job of doing due diligence as to this guy's qualifications to be school superintendent.
Yeah, well, look, what better qualifications?
He has no doctorate, right? And the City College and all these places.
Was he a good school superintendent? I mean, look, credentials aside, I'm curious. Was he a good school superintendent?
I think I heard some parents kind of saying, wait, he was good. He was good. I don't know, though, but that doesn't justify a bit.
It's an interesting
My cat might have been just as good of a school.
Maybe he was great at it, but just wasn't credentialed.
Right.
It's sort of like, you know, you find the guy who's been changed his name as a serial killer, and he's reintegrated into the community somewhere in like Arkansas, and he's a family guy, he's a coach, whatever, and he gets arrested.
But it just goes to show that when asked for an explanation, the chairman of the school board of Des Moines, Iowa, said, "Well, we were led to believe," quote unquote.
Boy, that's a classic passive voice.
Right.
We were led to believe. By whom?
Oh, the company that they hired. Now, the company they hired to vet these people, they came out with their own press release, and they said, here is a copy of our letter to the school board pointing out several areas of discrepancy in his CV.
Ah, so they were led to believe by their own bias. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Brett?
Wow. Be very, very careful on what you watch on the internet. OpenAI's Sora app is now unbelievable. You can put anybody's image up there and you will truly believe it is that person.
Yeah, that's scary. I'm running into some wall a little bit.
Like, wow. It's going to hit the courtroom soon. Really is. I've seen some examples of it, and it's like you can't see the problems with the lips anymore, and the audio's there, folks. It's going to be bad. This opens up.
Think of the ramifications for movies, for fudging evidence.
I'm more concerned about politics.
You could literally put words in somebody else's mouth.
And it can be shown as it actually happened that Trump is at the podium saying something, and you wouldn't know any differently.
Wow,
crazy!
This is crazy stuff. Yeah. Crazy stuff. So. Wow. Be very, very careful where you get your news, starting today. Seriously. And we've said this for the past years.
Get it here.
Wow. Good news for me. Rush is back on the road. That's my personal. Love it. They're back for another year. I'm getting tickets. I'm getting tickets.
Is the lead singer still the lead singer?
Yeah, Geddy. Geddy's still there. Yeah. Alex's still
there. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Neil Peart died, right? Though they have a new drummer?
Yeah, they have a new drummer. She's rocking it. She's good. Really good. So, so they end. It'll be a 17-date tour. They end it in Cleveland next September.
You know what, though? What is replacing them? Like, I had this thought recently about these old guys still touring. We don't have rock and roll anymore. We have, like, Taylor Swift, which is like it's more like a Disney show to me.
Yeah. Right.
I think The Who, aren't they doing their final tour?
Right, because they're good.
Yeah.
I guess Alex Lifeson had a dinner or something like that, or ran into Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney encouraged them. Go tour. You should be touring. Why aren't you?
Yeah, do it.
So
nobody's replaced this generation.
Let's go out. And they'll have what excited me is they'll have a really good memorial for Neil at each performance. Which to me that I just fell in love with them because of Neil. So I was a drummer in high school and just loved what they do. But anyway, I'm excited. So I think it's great.
All right. Well, I got nothing good nor bad. I got something good. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad the table's full again. So we are back in force, hopefully ongoing.
Steve, just one thing. I can't let this Rush thing go by. Just one thing. I hope Geddy wears boxers instead of briefs. Because that screechy high voice thing, that's the whole reason I'm not a Rush fan. No. Any other lead singer could have made that band even mega bigger.
I've never been a Rush fan.
That super high screechy stuff,
I never was a big Rush. I appreciate the
salesman.
Music. I appreciate the lyrics. I mean, I appreciate what they do. But
yeah.
It's never really.
And that's to each his own. And that's my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So. He was two octaves too high for me. Anyway. Sorry, Steve.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. CommonSenseOhioShow.com. If you got a comment, you got a question, you got something you want us to cover, you can send us a note, write it, commonsenseohioshow.com, or leave it in the comments, and we will get to it. We are here each and every day coming at you right from the middle.